Now, it is such a great pleasure for me to welcome via Zoom from the UK, British thriller writer CJ Tudor. I have just devoured her latest novel called The Burning Girls, which is published by Penguin Random House and distributed by them in South Africa. The third of her books, which I have read, I previously enjoyed The Taking of Annie Thorne, and the book just before this called The Other People. Really enjoyed both of those. They were both Sunday Times bestsellers in the UK. And I'm not at all surprised to see Stephen King giving her regular shots on social media, because if you are a fan of the dark and creepy and unsettling, you are going to love her style of writing. So CJ, it's so lovely to have you with us. Welcome to the show and welcome to Cape Talk.
Hiya, hello, thank you for having me.
I see from your own Twitter feed that just yesterday you finished the first draft of the next book, which is very exciting. I mean, the world is in such a mess right now. I know some writers are struggling to find creativity. Others are having great delight in escaping into their writing as a way to get away from all the mess. What's it been like for you? I guess that number five being partly ready while we're still talking about number four suggests you've been doing a lot of writing in the last year.
Yeah, it's been interesting times, I think, for everyone. And you're right, some people have, I think, really struggled with it. I kind of just ploughed on, but it has been a juggling act because obviously, you know, my little girl has been off school because all the schools have been closed. We've been trying to do the homeschooling as well. So yeah, it has been tough at times, but I always find it, I know some people say that when they get to an end of a book, they finish writing it, they're a little bit sad. I'm always really relieved because it's like, I've done it. I've got there. I've managed to finish another book. So it's a good feeling.
Okay. Now, you describe yourself, and we can tell already from the tone of the conversation, you're disturbingly cheery. I'm curious how somebody who is so cheerful and upbeat gets drawn into this particular genre of writing. I mean, did you grow up consuming Stephen King and the likes as a young reader?
I did. I really did. I mean, I'm quite old. So when I was a kid, there wasn't really any YA. So you really went really from children's books straight to adult books.
Yeah.
So I was reading Stephen King and James Herbert when I was probably about 11 and 12, really, straight from sort of Agatha Christie. That was my sort of Enid Blyton, Agatha Christie, Stephen King.
It's quite a jump. Yeah.
I found my thing then. And I've always loved dark stories. I think maybe I sort of get all the dark side out on the page.
I was going to ask, and I'll ask it now. I mean, do you struggle to separate the two? Because if you like this in real life, and then you immerse yourself into this very dark world with lots of loss, there's a running theme in your books of people searching for those that they love who have been lost. Is it hard to sort of keep those two worlds separate, or do you have any sort of deliberate rituals you do to step away and back into them?
I think despite being a really cheery person, I've always been one of those people who, if someone says, what's the worst that can happen? I can instantly think of it. I'm kind of always thinking of a worst case scenario. So I'm always sort of thinking of little stories in my head, I think. And I think I get all those dark worries and fears out on the page. I think being a mum for a start, you know, you see terror everywhere. You know, anything bad could happen at any time. But I think in some ways, perhaps getting that all out on the page, thinking of that dark side of life, those dark things that could happen, those near misses, those sort of paths not taken, that awful thing that you just perhaps avoided. I think it perhaps helps to put it down on paper and write about it rather than perhaps worry about it in my head.
That's really interesting. I must try that one, actually, because the mom worries are on all of our shoulders. I get you there. Let's talk a bit about the latest novel, The Burning Girls. And I must just give a brief intro to the book itself for the sake of the audience members who won't have read it yet. It's the most wonderful setting of an English country village called Chapelcroft, where everybody knows everybody. Nobody's business is ever quite their own. They're all very much in their noses into everybody else's business. And it's a place with an immense sense of history. 500 years ago, a group of Protestant martyrs were burned at the stake, and this village has never forgotten it or allowed the coming generations to forget it. They, in fact, recall it every year with a ritual where little twig dolls, known as the Burning Girls, are burned to commemorate this event. And they're proud of this history, and they remember the families who are descended from those people with great pride. Interestingly, though, this village has also largely allowed itself to forget the more recent tragedy of two teenage girls disappearing in 1990, Mary and Joy. Neither of them ever heard from again. Some assume they just ran away from home. Others are not quite so sure. And into this setting steps Reverend Jack Brooks, who, despite the name, is a single mother, arrives in the village with a lot on her shoulders and a lot on her conscience, along with a resentful 14-year-old daughter who's been torn away from her friends and decent Wi-Fi signal. So it's setting up all kinds of wonderful intrigue within that family, within the church community, and within the village itself. Layers upon layers of secrets everywhere. CJ, Chapel Croft may be fictional, but the concept of Protestant martyrs being burnt at the stake, sadly, all too real. What sort of led you to want to use that as the inspiration for a book?
Well, we moved from a large city in Nottingham, in sort of the middle of the UK, about 3 years ago now. And we moved to a very small village in Sussex, quite similar to Chapel Croft, actually. So a lot of the villages around here have this history of the Protestant martyrs. And they were burnt at the stake when Queen Mary was doing her purge of the Protestants. Nearly every small village in the area has a memorial to martyrs from the village who were burnt at the stake. And I found this a very macabre but fascinating history. And the small church just up the road from us, when we moved to this village, it's got a memorial. Mm-hmm. But it was the first thing I spotted before we moved to the village, because it's a very strange looking little chapel. It looks a little bit like it should be in a dusty Midwest town. It's that kind of white Baptist type of chapel. And something about it struck me the minute we drove past it, that it was kind of strange, it was kind of creepy, and it needed to be in a book. So that was kind of the kicking off point, this history of the martyrs in the area and this chapel. And I just thought, I need to write about this chapel and have this vicar come to this little chapel in this small village. And that was the kicking off point, really, for the whole story. And then all the mysteries came from there. And so far, a lot of the people who live in the area have read the book and they like it, which is good. I was a little bit of worry they might be chasing me out with pitchforks after reading the book, but they've all enjoyed it.
Oh, they're all trying to work out who's who and who you're implying is.
I think she comes to this village, starts writing about us,
puts us in a book.
That was really the inspiration. And you know, small villages are great material for creepy books. And I'm a big fan of the film The Wicker Man. And I wanted to really sort of imbue it with that kind of folk horror vibe combined with a good sort of old fashioned mystery as well.
Yeah, and you've done that. I mean, you've got all the trappings of the classic horror. There is the haunted house. There are the visions of burning girls in the graveyard. There is an exorcism kit left on the doorstep as the vicar arrives at her new home. All of that is there. But as you rightly say, so much of the mystery is human. It's not supernatural. This is not a book necessarily, although there are elements of the paranormal and the supernatural. This is very much not intended. Maybe you want to expand on that a little bit, that it's human horror that you're exploring.
It is, and that's what always interests me the most, actually. I think what I try to do is walk a line in my books where there is a dark and creepy element to it. So if you enjoy that, you will enjoy the sort of the creeps and the scares. But the mysteries are all very much resolved in sort of real life. The monsters are always people, what people do, what drives people to do bad things. So although it's got that very sort of creepy, dark atmosphere, it is very much a mystery, a classic mystery, where the answers are resolved in real life. Because I think otherwise you cheat the reader a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to have perhaps a creepy vibe, a slight supernatural aspect. But I think it's important to give the reader real answers. You know, a mystery that they could, if they follow the clues and pay attention, work out themselves. Otherwise, you're kind of cheating, I think.
For the record, I didn't see it coming. Not until I turned the page and it was actually there. I did not see that coming. Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, I'm in conversation with British author CJ Tudor about her latest novel, The Burning Girls. I know many of our listeners will have enjoyed the previous books, including The Chalk Man and The Other People, which was just one of my favorite reads last year. But this one is so atmospheric and so creepy. And let's talk about the setting of and the vicar and the church, because some people might read that the main character is a vicar and think that this is going to be about evil within the church and exorcisms, etc. And it's very much not that either. Why did you choose to make Jack a vicar?
I like writing characters who are very different from me. I think that's quite fun and it's quite a challenge. And I'm also not interested in writing typical characters like the detective or the forensic scientist or whatever you get in a lot of crime novels. And I thought a vicar would be an interesting challenge. And when I started thinking of a vicar, I thought, well, we have had male vicars obviously before. It would be even more interesting to write it as a female vicar and a mum as well. But yeah, but I'm not a religious person. So the challenge was writing someone who was very human and identifiable that people who aren't religious could relate to, because she's a mum and she's quite feisty and she's not a typical vicar, but also make her convincing within her faith as well.
Yeah.
So you had to have that balance. You couldn't be so extreme that it wasn't convincing she was a vicar. And that was actually really interesting to write. And I hope we sort of got that balance. But yeah, it is not sort of, you know, if you're not religious, if you're not interested in the church, it's not about that really. Jack's a very feisty and fun character. She likes cigarettes. She's got a very caustic sense of humor.
Yeah.
And then she's got this great relationship with her teenage daughter Flo. So they, you know, they have quite a lot of banter. Their relationship really is kind of key to it as well.
And I mean, that relationship was wonderful. I'm the mother of two teenagers and read so much reality in what I saw playing out between those two, right down to the Doc Martens and the sneaking out and pretending you're in one place when you're actually in another. That was gorgeous. I mean, you talk about Jack the Unusual Vicar. There's a delightful scene in the book, CJ, where a couple are planning their wedding and come to chat to the new vicar who's going to now, preside over this wedding. And they, you know, are so uncomfortable with the thought of a woman being there and being in their wedding photographs is the main thing that's preoccupying them. There was such lovely humor in that scene. But it is also another way of making Jack just that little bit more an outsider coming into a village which is so close-knit, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think, you know, fiction works very well. Certainly crime thrillers work very well if you have a character who is that outsider. You know, it's obviously something that crops up a lot in sort of books. You place a character who is slightly outside a community, who is viewed with suspicion, who has to sort of, you know, make efforts to sort of get to know a very closed community. And yeah, and of course that works very well with the character of Jack. So obviously she's coming from, you know, a big city to this small village. And also she's a woman, she's a female priest. And, you know, there still aren't that many female priests. And this is, I don't want to call it a backward village, but it's a very traditional small village. So yes, yeah, so a lot of the villagers do view her with a degree of suspicion, and she's got to sort of break down those barriers.
Now there is a sort of a theme of ghosts that haunt us in this book, and I don't necessarily mean only the supernatural kind of ghost. Jack, for one, comes to the village with a sense of being haunted by her previous posting. She has been sent into the sticks in the middle of nowhere because things have gone badly wrong in her previous parish. And I don't want to give too much of the plot away at this point. But yeah, I mean, do you use fiction as a way to allow people to put ghosts to rest, I guess, is the question.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, to a degree. I mean, it's funny because someone said to me the other day, it's a theme that's sort of in all of your books. And it's probably true, actually, that my characters in all of the books in a degree have got this past and ghosts they need sort of to lay to rest. And obviously that's an interesting sort of fiction device to have this past that a character is dealing with that sort of comes back that they have to sort of tackle in the present. I mean, personally, I haven't really got any ghosts that I need to lay to rest, fortunately. Disturbingly cheery, quite, you know, quite a sort of straightforward background. But I think obviously it's again, it makes the character more interesting. If you certainly can hint at this sort of mystery in the character's own background. And I think it works, without giving too much away, works well in sort of plot of this one. I mean, we know that Jack's, you know, something has happened in her previous church, that she's, you know, ended up with this in this little village in the sticks because of an event that happened there. And yes, so she's very much trying to sort of, I think, make amends for that. Which is how I think she gets involved in this mystery of the missing girls in Chapel Croft, because she sort of wants to make amends for things that have happened.
Now, interesting question in on our SMS line from our listener, Lucy. She's asking, do you ever scare yourself while writing the terrifying scenes that you do have in your book? It's a great question, Lucy. I mean, do you get goosebumps? Do you ever have that sense of wanting to look over your shoulder while you're writing?
I do sometimes get, you know, a little bit of the goosebump thing. I think it's if you know you're writing a good scene and you're enjoying it, you're making it suitably creepy. Generally, no, I don't scare myself because I kind of know what's coming, but I can get really involved in the book so that if, you know, I don't know someone is sort of going to pop up behind me and tap me on the shoulder, I will sort of do a bit of a jump. But generally, I think because you're in control of the scares when you write it yourself, you know, I am scared by pretty much everything. I actually can't watch scary films generally.
Oh, because
I'm terrible. Yeah, but it's okay if I'm writing it.
And I mean, I've got to ask about having Stephen King on your cover with a shout and tweeting about you and telling his fans, go and read this woman's books, you're going to love them. Was that I mean, that's the cherry on top, I think, for any writer to have somebody in the genre that they're working in, who is the master of the genre, recognize them like that. Tell us a little bit more about what that meant to you.
I mean, he's my absolute hero. I am a constant reader. You know, I've been reading Stephen King since I was 11, 12, and I've read all of his novels, and I'm just a huge, huge fan. He's my sort of writing hero, as he is for a lot of writers and authors. And that was one of my daydreams when I used to sort of, when I dreamt of being a writer and I was a dog walker, I used to walk around with the dogs and dream about writing this book and having a blurb from Stephen King on the cover, and it was all very much a daydream. So when this tweet popped up, I was on the train to London at the time, actually, and I opened Twitter and I saw this tweet from Stephen King recommending a book, and I started to read it and then realized it was my book. It was pretty incredible. I think I might have jumped up and gone, yes. So it's kind of really a dream come true. Yeah, absolute dream come true, because he is my writing hero and something I thought never in a million years would happen. I kind of have sort of got my dream right there. Because that's it, I'm done now.
Well, please don't stop, because we'd like some more. And we know there's another one coming, because you tweeted yesterday that you've just finished the first draft of the new book. It's a long process from there, although you do get them out quite quickly, having said that. Can you maybe just explain to our listeners, finishing the first draft of the book is nowhere near ready to put it onto a shelf. What actually happens next?
No, basically, I mean, it takes me between sort of 9 months and a year to write a book, because obviously you're doing other stuff in between, because you're perhaps promoting a previous book and this, that and the other. But from writing a book, it will then go to my editor. And my editor is a lovely, lovely, lovely lady called Max. And I say her job is basically, she's great at making me feel like the best writer in the world, while telling me all the reasons and ways that I'm not, basically, and all the things I need to get right in the book. So she'll read it and then she'll make suggestions, and then I edit it again. Then it has to go through several other processes, copy editors and proofreaders. And then we have to talk about covers and titles. And then proofs will go out to reviewers and things. So I mean, it's a long process. It takes, you know, at least another sort of 6-7 months really to get a book edited and ready for publication. And of course, publishers have their slots of when certain books need to go out. So a lot of people often say, oh, there's another year till another book. But it is sort of that longer process, really. And, you know, it's all required to make sure the book's, you know, good, free from typos, hopefully, and ready to put on the shelves. But I'm always sort of working on the next one when one's sort of coming out, really. You know, I shall now be working on book 6. So it's sort of a constant process.
Yeah. And I mean, so I think book 5 is probably due early next year from what I've seen. Okay.
2022, I hope. It is, at the moment, it is sort of titleless, because we are actually debating between a few titles, so okay. I can't give a title for it yet.
And I'm not going to ask you to tell us the plot. Can you tell us anything at all, though, or what to expect?
It's got many of the similar elements to my other books. There is a sort of a supernatural angle, but it is a mystery, and it involves a mother and daughter again. And events that have happened in the past, a school shooting, and a little girl who can perhaps predict things that might happen in the future. So it's bound up. It's very much about, if you could change fate, if you could perhaps save someone's life, would you? But would that have a ripple effect that actually affects a lot of other things? Is that always the right thing to do? So it's very much about those elements.
Sounds amazing. Can't wait. In the meantime, here we are having a conversation from the UK to Cape Town via Zoom. This is the world we now live in. CJ, I mean, promoting a new book in the middle of a lockdown has changed, been different from your previous book junkets. What's it been like for you?
It's been strange. I think, obviously, you know, bookshops have been shut, which has been last year when the other people came out. I remember saying, oh, I'm really glad that it came out in January before the lockdown, you know, because the bookshops were open. This year, I have found learning girls coming out in the middle of a lockdown with the bookshops shut. So it has been difficult. I think, you know, it's difficult for the retailers and the lovely booksellers who are so supportive of authors. And that's hard. And we've sort of had to adapt and do different things, virtual events, and as you say, Zoom, which has become, you know, our new way of doing stuff. And I think there's pluses and minuses to it. I mean, obviously, it's nice to sort of have proper events and get to see readers and you know, people in person and you know, sign books and all that sort of thing. And that's lovely. But I think, you know, in some ways, it's helped us realise perhaps, you know, we don't always need to travel to do things. We can do things virtually and in different ways. And that's maybe good in terms of the environment and everything else. But we adapt, don't we? I think that's what we have to do. We have to get on and we have to adapt.
Well, I've got to say, it's been a gift for us down here at the tip of Africa, because authors who would normally never have time to get to a little regional station in Cape Town get to have a conversation by Zoom, because they're not always on a plane flying to the next big city in Europe or America. So for us, it's been an absolute delight, for the record.
I think there are pluses to it, definitely. Because we can still do these things. You can't always travel to places to do stuff.
But
we are able to do this all virtually now.
CJ, several people asking the question around screen adaptations of your book. Is it something you've explored? Is it something you dream about? Are you on the road towards that already?
Yeah, I mean, actually, all four of the books have been optioned for television, but probably television, probably not film, because limited series is kind of the way we go with stuff now. So they have all been optioned, which is a nice place to be. The Chalk Man is at script stage. And The Burning Girls has also got a writer attached, Hans Rosenfeld, who was responsible for The Bridge. I think most people would know.
Oh, wow, yes.
Which is amazing. It's a huge, huge honour. So he will be working on the screenplay for The Burning Girls, which is fantastic. So we are at various stages. But, I mean, I've learned that TV is an odd thing. It can take quite a long time to get something actually onto the screen. So, you know, it's a sort of a longer process. I mean, The Chalk Man was optioned, you know, quite a while ago, and we're sort of only at script stage now. But it would be absolutely lovely to see it happen. But I would say it's the icing on the cake. I want to write books. I didn't set out to write TV series or films. I set out to write books. But if, you know, that does happen, that would be, again, icing on the cake. It would be lovely. It would be fascinating to see what an adaptation to the screen would do. Yeah, exactly.
I think The Other People would make for a brilliant series as well. But I mean, I know that the author has to take a bit of a step back in this process, and you don't get the luxury of dictating who gets cast in your roles, etc. But if you could, or maybe you had a person in mind as you were writing The Burning Girls, who would play Jack?
Don't know, actually. It's a difficult one, because I kind of have these sort of fictional characters in my mind, and I never like to sort of put a real person's face to them in sort of some ways. So I kind of, they sort of exist as a real person in my head, and then often I think you can sort of mention someone, but another actor or actress might not be someone you've thought of, but they could totally inhabit that role. So I'm not very good at saying, oh, I think this person would be perfect. I like to sort of just leave it open, really. Because in my head, they sort of all exist as real people. That's the weird thing.
CJ, I want to thank you so much for making time to chat to us today. The book is called The Burning Girls, and it's in South African bookstores now, thanks to Penguin Random House, retailing at around about 320 Rand a head. I read it cover to cover in 2 days over the Easter weekend. I couldn't put it down. Love the creepy, atmospheric, eerie, dark exploration of parts of ourselves that we don't always feel comfortable looking at, you're going to love this book as much as you did the previous one. CJ, all the best. Can't wait to get book number 5 on the shelves as well. And best wishes to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.